Okay, yeah, no pictures of cows tonight, but we are going to talk about the Dutch dairy cows of the 1920s, the milking cows on Shabbos. Very interesting question, and it relates to the discussion that we began last week of Dush and Schita, or not last week, 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, Dush and Schita. So we discussed that that one of the malachos on Shabbos is Dush, that you're not allowed to remove one thing from another. And the application, the main application that we discussed last week was squeezing or pressing fruit. So we talked about pressing olives into olive oil and grapes into grape juice and, you know, and oranges and lemons. And we discussed that there are certain heterim that you're generally not allowed to, because when you separate the liquid from the solid, that's mefarik, which is the tolda of dash. So generally you're not allowed to do that. We discussed certain heterim that you're allowed to do. You're allowed to squeeze it onto food. So we said you're allowed to squeeze your lemon onto your salmon. Onto liquid is not, you know, you're not allowed to do. So we said, you know, if you want to make lemonade, you squeeze it onto the sugar first, and then you can mix the sugar into the water to make the lemonade that way. So that's what we discussed last week in terms of pressing fruit. This week I want to discuss milking cows. Now, milking cows, seemingly, and pressing fruit doesn't have much to do with each other, but if you think about it, it's actually quite similar, right? You're taking a solid and essentially removing the liquid that is absorbed in that solid. So whether it's a lemon or whether it's a cow, you know, either way, you're taking that liquid out and removing it, and you want to use that liquid. So essentially, you can't do that on Shabbos. And the Mishnah tells us, it really a brisa, which is source number one, and this is the Gemara in Shabbos, brought in the Gemara in Daf Tzadi, Heyam and Aleph. The Braisa tells us, Tanu Rabbanan, Hacholev, one who milks, Ve'amachabetz, Ve'amagavin, Kigrogeres, different applications of milking and creating cheese, taking that milk and making cheese from it. All those things are prohibited on Shabbos. Hamachabet, Hamarabetz, and then the Braisa goes on to discuss several other things that are prohibited on Shabbos. And then the Gemara says, the Braisa says, Shogag b'Shabbos chayav chatas. That if you do any of these malachos b'shogeg, you're obligated to bring a carbon chatas, which is always the dead giveaway, that this is a malach, that these are malachos mida oraisa. Right? Any time that b'shogeg you have to bring a carbon chatas, if you're bringing a carbon, that means that it's a da oraisa. Comes Rabbi Eliezer, that's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. V'chachamim omrim, the Braisa concludes, the Chachamim say, the Chacham will come along and say it's only aser midirabbanan. It's not so clear, you know, what the Chachamim are talking about. The language of the Brice is a little bit ambiguous. It says echad ze ve'echad ze, this and this. So what is that referring to? Is that referring to just the last couple of cases? Is it referring to all of the cases that were mentioned in the Brice? It's not so clear what the Chachamim are referring to when they disagree with Rabbi Eliezer and say that it's only aser midirabbanan. So because of that, there is a machlokas rishonim if milking a cow, which is the first malacha that was mentioned here in the braisa, whether that's aser midel rice or midirabbanan. It's certainly clear that it's aser, but it seems to be a question if it's aser midel rice or midirabbanan. Now you might say, well, who cares if it's aser midel rice or midirabbanan? Either way, I can't do it. But we know that there are sometimes kulas, you know, certain leniencies or heterim when something is only aser midirabbanan in certain cases of extenuating circumstances, which don't always exist when it comes to deoraisis. That will be important a little bit later in our discussion. Now, why? What's the malacha of hacholev? The Brayis identifies hacholev. Hacholev is not one of the lamites malachos. It's not one of the 39 avos malachos. So where does that where does that come in? So the Gemara continues there on Sadi Hay. Rav Nachman Bar Gurya ikla l'Neherda. Rav Nachman Bar Gurya went to visit the city of Neherda. Bo Mine, when he got there, big gadol is here. Rav Nachman Bar Gurya, let's ask him the following shaila. Cholev mishum mai mechayiv. We know that you're not allowed to be cholev on Shabbos. You can't milk a cow on Shabbos. Why not? Right? Well, what are you chayiv for if you milk a cow on Shabbos? Also shol be medrasha. So he went and he asked around in the base medrash what people thought. Amrulei, they told him, Cholev chayiv mishum mefarik. Cholev is chayiv. If your person milks the cow on Shabbos, you're chayiv because of mefarik. Right? Mefarik is the same malacha that we were discussing last week, this malacha of removing a liquid from that's absorbed inside of a solid. So you're chayiv mishum mefarik. So that's the tolda, which is the tolda of dash, and that's what you're going to be chayiv for if you milk a cow on Shabbos. And the Rambam paskins this way, seemingly in Hilchos in Hilchos Shabbos Perek Ches. If you look at source number 2, he begins this halacha by discussing what we discussed last week. One who presses fruit, hasochet es haperos, lahotzi meimei and chayv mishum mefarik. He says you're obligated, you violate mefarik on Shabbos. And then at the end of that halacha, he concludes, v'acholiv lesocha ochel lo ayonek b'piv potev einu chayv ad sheyachlov lesocha kli. And he says, without getting into the details that he talks about, but he says if a person is cholev on Shabbos, they're also chayv. Seemingly, since this is all incorporated into the same halacha, the Rambam seems to be saying, like this Gemara says clearly, that you're chayv mishum mefarik. There's certain Rishonim that want to disagree, and they say we don't really go with that Gemara, and maybe you're chayv for other reasons, but it seems to be that the Rambam and many other Rishonim, Tosos in the name of the Ri and others, say that you're chayv mishum mefarik. It's the same Tolda that we discussed last week. Okay. Seemingly. We'll talk about some of that. So now here comes the problem. The problem is the old yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael. Because after all, okay, dairy farmers, you know, how many Jews are really dairy farmers already? Right? I mean, it happens to be that when I learned in Eretz Yisrael, the menahel of the high school owned a dairy farm. So he was a dairy farmer. I mean, I guess on the side. I don't know which was on the side. But he was a dairy farmer also. But how many Jews, you know, usually, you know, but by the way, the reason why he went into it, interestingly enough, he was one of the original students of Rav Aaron Cutler in Lakewood, back when Lakewood was a small little town, or I should say it was a small little Jewish town, or non-Jewish town, with a few Jews sprinkled in. So he was one of the original Talmidim, and they had a hard time getting Chol of Yisrael milk in Lakewood. You know, it wasn't so easy then to get Chol of Yisrael milk in Lakewood. So he went into the dairy business. You know, I think he began by taking over, kind of renting the space from a dairy farm one day a week and, making a Chol of Yisrael run. And then he ended up creating his own business, Chol of Yisrael dairy products. But that's how he began. But, you know, generally, most Orthodox Jews are not dairy farmers. So we didn't really have this question too much. All right, milk a cow on Shabbos. You know, probably most people read my email today. They're like, all right, you know, I live in Woodmere. I'm not milking a cow on Shabbos. I don't have to come to the rabbi's shir. But what happened was when the old yeshuv came back to Eretz Yisrael, people came and settled the land of Israel. So they were dairy farmers. You know, you needed milk. You needed chal of Yisrael. You know, you certainly needed chal of Yisrael milk. You need milk. You gotta have dairy farmers. So Jews owned these dairy farms. And in the 1920s, the question was posed to the Gedolim of Eretz Yisrael at that time, and they said, well, what do we do about Shabbos? Because in those days, in the 1920s, the cows that they had in Eretz Yisrael, apparently, I learned were Dutch dairy cows. Those were the cows that they used in Israel at the time in the 1920s. And those cows apparently had to be milked every single day. If you missed it, if you could not skip a day of milking these cows, you know, they produced enough milk. If they wouldn't be milked on Shabbos, it would be dangerous. You know, it would certainly be a loss of revenue for the Jews because, you know, they wouldn't be able to produce as much milk after Shabbos. But it would also be dangerous for the cows themselves. It would be tzar balei chayim. The cows were in pain because of it. You know, they were bloated. So what do you do? How do we go about doing this? You know, we have these frum dairy farmers. How do they go about milking cows on Shabbos? We just learned that a person is not allowed to milk a cow on Shabbos. So the best solution to this problem is offered by the Shulchan Aruch himself in source number 3 in Hilchos Shabbos in Shinhei. And the Shulchan Aruch writes, Mutr lomer le'eno yehudi lachlov behem to b'Shabbos, mishum tzar balei chayim, sha'cholov metzara. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew, even though generally we do not ask non-Jews to do malacha for us on Shabbos. Right? There's a common misconception that a person can ask a non-Jew or hint anything to a non-Jew. Maybe we'll talk about that another time. But and then everything's okay. That's a misconception. You cannot ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you on Shabbos. There are certain exceptions, which you know we'll talk about one day.
Make a difference. Isn't there a
bond too? Yeah, well, that plays into it. So so here the Shulchan Aruch says, but when it comes to this issue of milking cows on Shabbos, when the cows are betzar, the cows are in pain because they're bloated, they need to be milked. So then in that case of tzar balei chayim, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to milk that cow for you on Shabbos. But right, the Shulchan Aruch, v'achol of osur bo bayom. You're not allowed to use the milk on Shabbos. You can store it, you can use it after Shabbos. You're not allowed to use the milk on Shabbos. Some disagree, comes the Shulchan Aruch and writes, v'yesh omrim, she'tzarech liknoso min ha'eno yehudi bidavar muat, shelo yehenire kecholev l'tzorech Yisrael. He says, you know, it's not so simple just to have a non-Jew milk every Shabbos. You know, the goyim come into the farm and milk the cows. It's the pasnish. It doesn't look good. Looks like the goyim are just coming in and doing your malacha for you on Shabbos. We can't have that. So that's why the second opinion says, listen, you know, you shouldn't just enlist the goyim to do it, but you should pay them something. You know, like buy the milk off them. Almost as if they're really milking for themselves. It's their milk. After Shabbos, you'll give them a little money. You'll buy the milk off of them. You know, you'll arrange it with them in advance. So that way it doesn't seem as a, you know, a flagrant violation of Shabbos. You have goyim just coming in and milking for you. So this way you'll buy it from them after Shabbos, and that will solve the issue. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch recommends. And this is really the best solution. This is the best Eitzah. You hire non-Jews, you ask non-Jews to come and milk the cows for you. If you want to be machmir like this, Yeshomer, you can even, you know, purchase the milk for a little bit of money after Shabbos to make it even more glatt, and then you're good to go. The problem is, you know, it wasn't always so simple in Israel to enlist the help of the goyim. First of all, the goyim in Israel weren't always, or aren't always, so friendly with us, to us. So that was problem number one. Problem number two, interestingly enough, was that at that time, there was some sort of plague. I don't know the identity of the plague, but there was some sort of disease that was going around. And the government at the time mandated that no Arabs from an Arab village that had an outbreak of this disease were allowed into any Jewish cities or Jewish towns, because they were scared that the Arabs in these villages where they had the outbreak of the disease were going to bring the disease and infect the Jewish cows, you know, and the Jewish livestock. So they prohibited, the government prohibited all Arabs from these villages to come and work on the Jewish farms, and this caused a big problem, because here, you know, they were short laborers, and especially when it came to Shabbos, they didn't have access to the non-Jewish laborers in the way that they once did, especially when this disease broke out, and they were really stuck. They couldn't ask a non-Jew to milk the cows. What do? They're stuck. So comes Rav Uziel, who was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv at the time, later became the Sephardic chief rabbi of the land of Israel, in source number 4 in his Shalos Tshuvos Mishpatei Uziel, and he says, listen, you know, essentially we're stuck here. Right, we have a big problem, because we have Tzar Balei Chayim, okay, Tzar Balei Chayim, which some authorities say is a din d'oraisa, so the cows are in pain. Number two, you're talking about a financial loss, because people are losing money, because if you can't milk the cows on Shabbos, not only are you losing that milk on Shabbos, forget about the milk of Shabbos, but they're going to produce less after Shabbos. So you're having that problem. And number three, it could be potentially dangerous to the cows, in which case it certainly would cause a loss of revenue for the dairy farmers. So what do we do here? So we said our hands are tied, and we're forced to paskin like some of the opinions that we otherwise would not have paskin like. So he says, for example, in source number 4, right there at the beginning, he writes, he says, number one, even though the majority of the Rishonim seem to hold that milking a cow is an Isser Del Raisa on Shabbos, and once again, once you have an Isser Del Raisa, it is much, you know, much, much less wiggle room in terms of finding, you know, different leniencies. But he says we can rely on the opinions that hold that it's an Issa D'Rabbanan. There are reliable opinions that say it's an Issa D'Rabbanan. It might not be the majority opinion, but in these extenuating circumstances, writes the Mishpatei Uziel, we can rely on that opinion that it's an Issa D'Rabbanan. And therefore, V'ho'il v'yesh kan tzar ba'alei chayim she'abahima mitzaris b'cholav she'bedadeha. And he says, since we have tzar ba'alei chayim, because the animal's in pain, because it's bloated from this milk, v'kayim lan tzar ba'alei chayim del rice, and we hold Tzar Balei Chaim is Asur Midol Raisa. Asi Del Raisa V'dochi Yisur D'Rabbanan. He says the Del Raisa of Tzar Balei Chaim will come and will push away the Yisur D'Rabbanan of milking cows. So therefore, you have an obligation Midol Raisa to prevent pain to animals. I have an Yisur D'Rabbanan. I'm not allowed to milk cows. So therefore, the Yisur Del Raisa can push away that Yisur D'Rabbanan. He says not only that, but we also have other factors involved here. Not only tzara de gufa de behema, not only do we have the actual pain that the animal is in, v'hef said mamon, we have a financial loss as we discussed. And then he writes also, v'yishuv Eretz Yisrael. We have a mitzvah to build up Eretz Yisrael. Here, if you can't have dairy farms in Eretz Yisrael, Jews can't own dairy farms, you're not going to have a yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. We have to make sure that there's a sustainable yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, he says, "Yesh lahatir achaliva b'shavas adas harabanu de'ime." You're allowed. We can be matir this, and we can hold that it's only aser midrabanan, and we can rely on the Ramban and other great Rishonim b'shas adchak in pressing situation. We can rely on these opinions. Now he does give a couple of conditions to this. Okay, and he says, number one, you shouldn't do it by hand, but rather you should do it with some sort of a mechanical mechanism. You know, they had some sort of a mechanism. This was before the days of the electric milking machines, which we'll talk about. But they had some sort of a manual mechanism. He says it's better to use that than to use your actual hands, without getting into all the background of these conditions. Condition number two, he says it should be done privately. You know, try to like do it, you know, indoors, inside the barn or something like that. You don't want it to be done in public. People see you doing this on Shabbos. Number three, he says that it's only if it's impossible to get non-Jews to do it. But if you have local Arabs or other people who can come milk your cows, that's certainly the preferable way of doing it. And number four, he says you can only do the amount that's necessary, right? You can't just, you know, you can only do them, you know, can only milk the cow, literally the minimum that's necessary to relieve its pain, you know, and to ensure that the cow will be okay. But other than that, you can't milk anymore. You can only do exactly what's necessary. So you see that even though there was a shas adchak, there was some sort of a pressing situation, and he was willing to rely on some of the more lenient opinions, nevertheless, he still is, you know, being careful and imposing certain conditions upon his heter. A fascinating line he ends with, I if you look at the very end of that paragraph number four, where it's underlined, he writes, you know, in a fascinatingly humble way. He writes, "Kol zani omer lo lahalacha velo lamasa." He says, you know, who am I to come and paskin a major halacha like this?" I mean, he was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. He was, he was a big gadol. He wrote this tshuva. You could tell, you know, he wasn't. He was no minor leaguer. Elahatzo lamasa umatan levrura ulevona shel halacha zu. He says, "I'm just putting this out there as a suggestion so that we can talk about the various." Possibilities of how to circumvent this problem. He says, but please don't rely on this until other rabbis in this country agree with me. Right? You know, it's interesting. You know, he felt that this was okay, but he realized that he's treading on thin ice a little bit. This was kind of uncharted waters. It was a little bit of a shaky ground, and he said, you know, I'm willing to say it, but you know, don't act on it until other people join onto my bandwagon. And agree with me. You see the humility that he had, despite all of his all of his reasoning. He said, you know, I can't come and do this alone. We saw when we discussed the Shiloh over Pesach of Mishin Matzos. We saw similar language also in different poskim, where even if they were willing to be matir, you know, they weren't willing to just take it and run with it if they didn't feel that the gedolim were behind them or the other rabbanim were behind them. So it's an interesting perspective when it comes to psak halacha. As important as it is sometimes to be a trailblazer and to come up with innovative ideas, but the post can recognize the fact that there has to be some sort of consensus, you know, to these ideas. And very often we see when there are trailblazing, innovative ideas in halacha that don't have a consensus, you know, they fall by the wayside relatively quickly. So it's important. It's an important perspective. This was written. If you look at the very end, this was written in Tammuz of Tafresh Peivav. Tammuz of Tafresh Peivav. In Elul. Of Tafresh Peivav, just a couple of months later, in Elul of Tafresh Peivav, comes Rav Kook, right? Rav Kook, the great Rav Kook, the chief rabbi of the land of Israel, in his Shalosh Tshuvos Orach Mishpat, and Rav Kook is not very happy with this approach. Rav Kook is not very happy with this approach. He doesn't like it. And Rav Kook, you know, if you had to pick one rabbi as the God of the Eretz Yisrael, who was the most Zionistic, who was the most committed to the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, who wouldn't choose Rav Kook? Right, as the philosopher and the one who held that flag of Zionism and Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and yet Rav Kook was very upset by this psak halacha. Kook was a gadol, right? So Rav Kook, higiani kuntreso ayakar uriisi his amtsuso haneemana letovas achenu bali hamechalvos. He says, I believe he's referring to this kuntres of Rav Uziel, the Mishpatei Uziel, and he says, I saw what he wrote and he did it. You know, he was. He really had good intentions when he put out this suggestion. But he said it's very difficult to rely on this and be lenient in this matter. He says the majority opinion is that this is an Isser d'Oraisa, not an Isser d'Rabbanan. The majority opinion is that this is an Issur d'oraisa, writes Rav Kook. If that's the majority opinion, we can't just choose the minority opinion just because, you know, we're in a difficult situation. That's an Issur d'oraisa. You can't play around with this. He says, we can't come and just permit a Jew to milk cows on Shabbos. It's an Issur d'oraisa. You can't do it. So he really is not very happy with the suggestion of the Mishpatei Uziel. He does write, listen, there are some who want to be lenient, and what they do is they milk the cows, and the milk goes li'ibud, which means the milk is not caught in a pail, but they milk it onto the ground. Okay, where they put something in the pail that ruins the milk. Essentially, the milk is ruined as soon as it comes out. Okay, and some people were doing that. Now, writes Rav Kook, he wasn't super excited about that either, but he writes, and we'll discuss that heter in a minute, v'day lanu, he says it's enough. He said, listen, it's enough that I'm turning my back on those who are milking straight onto the ground, milking li'ibud. He said, I'm not protesting against them. He said, but even that, no Talmud Chacham should come out and be matir that. No Talmud Chacham should come out and allow a person to milk even li'ibud, even straight onto the ground. He says, no Talmud Chacham should be matir that. And, I'm not willing to put up a fight. I'm not willing to protest against them. But to extend that heter, that now a Jew can even milk into a pail and keep the milk, chas v'shalom. Chalila, chalila, he says, to extend that heter, that a Jew should milk and collect the milk into a pail and use that milk after Shabbos, chalila, chalila, writes Rav Kook. Now, what is this heter? This heter that some employed of milking directly onto the ground, li'ibud. So the reasoning behind this heter, number one, is that it's what the poskim call a malacha, really the Gemara refers to, as a malacha she'ena tzricha lagufa, which means that I'm doing a malacha on Shabbos not for its own use. I'm milking a cow not for the milk. I don't want the milk. I'm milking the cow just to relieve the cow. That's all I'm doing, right? Another example is let's say a person digs a hole and doesn't need the dirt. That's another example. You're digging a hole, you don't need the dirt for anything. You want the hole. It's called a malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. I'm doing a malacha where I don't need the result of that malacha. I'm milking a cow. I have no use for the milk. I just want to relieve the cow. So that's a malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. Malacha she'ena tzricha legufa is a little bit more, where it could be a little bit more lenient than malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. And putting that together with the opinion that some say that milking a cow is only an issur midrabbanan, so that's why some allowed this practice of milking directly onto the floor to relieve the cows. But again, the Rav Kook is not very happy with it. He says, listen, it's enough that I turn my eye from them and I don't protest against what they're doing, but chalila, chas v'shalom, to extend that heter even further and allow the Jew to milk the cow and keep the milk. Yeah.
Isn't that baltashkus?
Yeah, but what are you going to do? I mean, yeah, it is baltashkus, but sometimes you have to violate baltashkus. You know, you have tzar bali chayim also. You know, so, I mean, listen, there are certain times when we do baltashkus. You know, a person does kriya. I mean, that's a mitzvah. You know, we do kriya on our clothing after someone passes away. It's also baltashkus. You ruin the shirt, right? But there's a mitzvah to do kriya, right? There's a mitzvah to burn chametz. It's also baltashkus, but we have a mitzvah to do it. This is not exactly the same thing because there's no mitzvah to milk the cow, but there is a mitzvah to prevent tzar bali chayim. Right, that's part of the goal here. We don't want the cows to be in pain; they're in excruciating pain. So we want to milk them to prevent tzar bali chayim. So that was Rav Kook. He was not very happy about this, and he said, "Listen," he said, "What are you going to do?" Va'akav be'ezras Hashem shimnamor kulanu ba'aguda achas lechazek esidei acharedim al kedushas Shabbos Kodesh. He says, "I'm confident. I hope. I pray. And I'm confident that if we gather all together and we join hands, we join forces." To strengthen those who care about Hilcho Shabbos, yimtzu gam kais nachrim sheyuchlu lachlo v'yichnesu b'rishayon ha-memshalo l'moshavos. We'll find the goyim to do it. We'll find the goyim to do it. He had the emuna, you know, and the tikva that if we band together and we stick to our guns and we're careful about Hilcho Shabbos, we'll find the goyim that we need to milk our cows on Shabbos. And if you look there, you look at his language, he says v'yichnesu b'rishayon ha-memshalo. The government will allow the non-Jews to come into our moshavot, to come into our settlements. They'll allow them, and we'll be able to do it. But he says otherwise, you know, it's really a terrible thing. V'nafig minei churvo pirsa gedolu b'zilusa dechilu Shabbos Kodesh. V'adai lo seitzei hora kazos mechach me Yisrael l'masa. He says for a person to come out and to say that a Jew can milk the cow and keep the milk in the pail, chas v'shalom, he says it's a zilusa dechilu Shabbos Kodesh. He says you're degrading Shabbos. It's degrading Shabbos. And he says, a chacham can't come out and say this. So that's there we have two opinions. We have one opinion of Rav Uziel who says that a Jew can do it, relying on the opinion that it's only asur midirabbanan. And then we have Rav Kook, and Rav Uziel again had all of his conditions. It wasn't so simple. He had many, four conditions that you had to meet in order to employ this heter. But then Rav Kook came, and Rav Kook very strongly disagreed with him, and he held that no, you have to only do it through a non-Jew, and if you don't have non-Jews, you got to find them. But you can't do it al yidei Yisrael. Maybe those who want to do it le'ibu, they want to do it straight onto the ground. Okay, I don't agree with it, but I'm not going to stop them, right? But certainly not to extend the heter any further than that. Another heter that was offered, by Rav Shol Yisraeli, if I'm not mistaken, was that one of the things that we learned last week, which Joe alluded to a little bit towards the beginning of the shiur, one of the things we learned last week is that you're allowed to press fruit if it's going onto food. So we said, for example, you're allowed to take a lemon on Shabbos and squeeze it onto your salmon, right? No problem. No problem at all if it's totally mutter on Shabbos, right? Why? Because we said, mashke habala ochel is like ochel. If the liquid is going onto the food, we judge the whole thing as food. It's not liquid anymore. We judge it as food, which will be important later for towards the end of this year. And comes Rav Shol Yisraeli and others and suggested, maybe you should do this. Maybe you should take some bread, fill the pail up with bread, and you'll milk directly onto the bread. Now, that milk is not really going to be very usable after Shabbos, right? It's not quite li'ibud. It's not the same thing as going onto the floor, but it's not really usable. You can't really use it for much after Shabbos. But apparently there were certain things that they could use it for. They could use it for producing cheese, apparently, which did cut the profits in half, supposedly, from what I read. But you could use the milk. It was usable after Shabbos. So some had this recommendation, right? Fill the pail up with bread and or something like that, and milk directly onto the bread. So the bread soaks up the milk, and that way it will be mashya habala soch ochel, and we view it like ochel. It's another heter. However, just to remind us of the couple of sources that we learned last week, if you remember, we actually saw these last week, but they were out of context. They were in the context of milking. So now they're in context this week. Comes the Mishnah Berurah and says you can do it, as long as the majority of the milk is being absorbed into the food. Source number 6, Sheyesh b'kedera kol kach ochlin, kifitzorech ha'chalav l'tikuno al kopanim sherov ha'chalav yeh nitzrach la'ochal. He says either all of the milk has to be absorbed, or at least the majority of the milk, most of the milk has to be absorbed. If there's a little bit that's not absorbed, that's okay. And then he says that's fine. However, if you turn the page, comes the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, in source number 7, and writes, you got to take this seriously. You can't play games here. You can't just stick one little slice of bread at the bottom of the pail and then fill the whole pail up with milk. That doesn't work, right? You can't inundate the bread with milk. Writes the Shulchan Aruch HaRav in source number 7. Bamed Dvorim Amurim, what are we talking about where we allow this? You're milking straight into this food, and it's going to be beneficial to the food in some way. So then we say that the milk is batel to the food, and we give the milk the status of the food. It doesn't have a status of mashke, of liquid anymore. It has the status of a solid. However, but you want to fill up a whole pail of milk and you just have a little slice of bread at the bottom, even though it's true that some milk is being absorbed into that slice of bread, but nevertheless, since the majority of that milk, or much of that milk, is not being absorbed into the bread, you can't do that. So you can't play games. So it has to be serious. It has to be, you're really like almost filling the pail, maybe three quarters of the way with bread, and you let the milk go in, and the milk really gets absorbed into the bread. If there's a little milk on top, that's okay, as long as the majority of the milk went into the bread. So that was a suggestion that some had to do that. But again, it's not so simple because you can't drink the milk afterwards. You can only use it for certain purposes. Yeah.
You can use that bread afterwards.
Yeah. Not on Shabbos. Meaning you can't. Well,
why would you be able to do that on Shabbos?
saying it's the same thing as the salmon with lemon. Yeah, maybe yes. Right. Yeah.
Why the concern about losing money if you spill it even all to the ground? I mean,
right.
If you have a store, you can't open the shops.
Right. Right.
Even if you waste the milk.
True. Right. I mean, you're right, and I think that's why you know they said you could do that. You know, you're right. I mean, you know, there's not much of a concern. You know, you're going to lose money on Shabbos. You're going to lose money. What are you going to do? In the long run, you're going to gain because you're milking the cows. The cows will continue to produce milk at the regular rate that they produce them. Exactly. Right. Okay. Now the Chazon Ish, interestingly enough. Because the Chazon Ish also, you know, was involved in the Shiloh a little bit. And the Chazon Ish writes, he is matir, a person. He says, you know, again, it's not ideal, it's not lechatchila. The best thing to do is to get a non-Jew, like the Shulchan Aruch says. But he says, if you can't, he says, you can milk le'ibur. You can milk it directly onto the ground, writes the Chazon Ish in source number 8. U'bizman she'en amotei in a Yehudi lachlov, if you can't find a guy to do it, nira di'esh lehake lachlov l'soch kli, mos. You're allowed to milk either onto the ground, or into some sort of disgusting pail that no one would ever drink out of, you can milk into there. She'achalav yelech li'ibud o ala aretz. Tikol she'olech li'ibud lav she'im v'farikala. And the svara, the logic is, that if the milk is going li'ibud, if the milk is going onto the ground or going into a pail and it's unusable, so it's not mefarik. Mefarik is when I extract a liquid that I'm going to use from a solid. But if the liquid's going li'ibud, it's going into the pail, it's going into this disgusting pail, or it's going onto the ground, I can't use it. Yeah.
I
believe the same thing applies on Yom Tov.
Same thing applies on Yom Tov.
Yeah. I don't think there's any heter on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, we have a heter of Ochel Nefesh. You're allowed to cook for Ochel Nefesh. So, I wonder. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. It's interesting. I have to think about that.
It is a malacha.
Yeah. But maybe for Ochel Nefesh it would be okay. Meaning if you need the milk to drink, maybe it would be okay.
But you're not drinking it on Shabbos anyway.
Correct. For Shabbos, you can't drink it.
Right.
Right, but maybe on Yom Tov you could. I'm not sure.
Processed.
Yeah, right. I mean, correct.
And that's the process.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they always... I don't know. I'm not sure. Did people used to drink milk straight from the cow? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Maybe back then.
Excuse me?
Maybe back then.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, they certainly didn't process it the way we process it. That's for sure. Maybe they boiled it. I don't know what they did, but... you know. Okay. Now, obviously, as technology progressed, this Shiloh became less of a Shiloh, because once we had the technology, we had electric pumping machines, which is what they have now. Right now, in these big dairy farms, you know, there's no you don't have the guy sitting there milking the cows. So so they hooked them up to machines, and the machines milk the cows. So now there's much more wiggle room in terms of being matir these things on Shabbos. Why? Because number one, you can set the machine on a timer. Right? To do it on Shabbos. Right? You could certainly ask a non-Jew, let's say, to turn on the machine on Shabbos, but even, let's assume the machine is not a Delraisa, but you could certainly set it on a timer. And that's essentially what happened, that they were allowed to do that. The Chazon Ish writes in source number 9 that there's no problem. V'nira d'lefi zeh, t'mutu l'halbish atzinur al dadei ha'parah shesof t'nuas ha'chashma l'avoy de'psichas ha'sha'on. He says you're allowed to set the machine on a timer, and you hook up. You know the machine's going to go on at 10 o'clock in the morning. So at 9:30 or 9:45, you go and you hook up the machine to the cow, right? That you're allowed to do, and then the machine's hooked up. And now 10 o'clock, the Shabbos clock goes on. It turns on the machine. The machine starts milking the cow. No problem. He says that's a grama, right? That's a grama. You're allowed to do it. And now they even have, you know, with Tzomet and all of these, Baruch Hashem, all the technological advances in Israel, they have ways to essentially build grumma into almost any electronic device. Right? They can build a grumma switch and some sort of grumma into pretty much any electronic device. We don't use it lechatchila, you know, we don't turn on the lights with grumma and things like that. But for people who are not well, for people who are sick and things like that, you know, certainly doctors have all these things. I still remember growing up, in Great Neck, there was a gramophone in the shul office. You know, there's a gramophone, and doctors used to go in on Shabbos if they had to. Back in the olden days, they would, you know, the beeper would go off, and they would go into the office, and they could use this gramophone to make a phone call on Shabbos, and it just minimized the malacha a little bit. So this grumma, it's, you know, indirect, it's one step removed, it makes it a little bit better. I mean, we could give a whole shiur about grumma, maybe we will one day. But this is, you know, kind of one step removed. So it helps. And these things are built into the machines now. They build them into the machines so that on Shabbos, you know, they go off on timers and they have grumma switches and everything is all this, you know, it's removed. So Baruch Hashem, nowadays, we don't really have this issue because we rely on the machines and we set them up before Shabbos to do what they have to do. And that's the way that the Frum dairy farmers, you know, work nowadays on Shabbos. Okay. Now let's shift gears just towards the last few minutes of the shiur. Let's shift gears and talk about, not milking, but let's talk about nursing for a minute. Because if you think about it, obviously the mechanics of milking and nursing are the same. And nursing is something that comes up on a regular basis for a mother that's nursing her baby. What does she do on Shabbos? Is she allowed to nurse her baby on Shabbos? So we all know the answer to that is, of course you're allowed to nurse your baby on Shabbos. Besides for the fact that the baby wouldn't have anything to eat if it didn't nurse, right? Assuming, you know, he's not using formula or whatever. But you're certainly allowed to nurse a baby on Shabbos, right? That's a given. That's not a question. That's not a shaila. You're certainly allowed to. Why? What's the logic behind it? So Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach explains in a very interesting way the logic behind this heter to nurse a baby on Shabbos. Not a heter, but this halacha, you're allowed to nurse a baby on Shabbos. If you look at source number 10, this is in the Shmirah Shabbos Kehilchasa, which was written by one of Shlomo Zalman's students, Rav Neuwirth. And he writes, "Va'od shamati mihagrashas." He wrote shlita because at the time Rav Shlomo Zalman was living. So, but now it says zatzal shemutu lahanik tinok. Of course, you're allowed to nurse a baby on Shabbos. Why? To hoil v'kach derech achiloso. Since that's how a baby eats, right? This is how the baby eats. V'gam chashi mishum kach ochav lo mashka. So he says, number one, it's derech achila. There are many times when certain malachos are allowed derech achila. So we discussed last week that there are certain times. Right, we discussed last week if you have the fruit in your mouth that you're allowed to suck the juice of the fruit out while it's in your mouth because that's called derech achila. You're allowed to do that. There's no iser if it's derech achila. We know borer. We didn't discuss borer yet, but you know, separating things once it's in your mouth, you're allowed to pick out the watermelon pits or the chicken bones or the fish bones. You're allowed to do that. That's derech achila once it's in your mouth. So too when it comes to mefarik, which is a toldo of dosh. Also, derech achila is okay. It's the baby. That's derech achila. That's number one. Number two, v'gam chashi mishum kach ochel v'lo mashke. He says, because it's derech achila, he says, it's not even called a mashke. It's called an ochel. That's the baby's food. Happens to be, this baby only eats liquid food. Right? But that's his food. It's not. It doesn't have a din mashke. For the baby, it has a din ochel. Interesting svara. And he writes, l'chein nikra b'shem achilas adam elokim mefarik. It's not mefarik. This is eating. Right? This is not mefarik. This is eating. Right, so Rosh Shlomo Zalman. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman says, absolutely no problem. A woman is certainly allowed to nurse on Shabbos. So that's not a question. But however, what is a question is, let's say a woman wants to express milk on Shabbos. So for example, let's say a woman's in pain and she needs to relieve some of that pain. She needs to express milk, or she has extra milk. She wants to express it to save it, to freeze it, whatever she wants to do with her milk. So is a woman allowed to do that on Shabbos? So comes the Shulchan Aruch in source number 11 and says, first of all, the only heter is to directly nurse the baby. However, lo takel isha chalav midadeh l'socha kosa l'socha kedei revesanikez b'no. But she can't express milk into a bottle and then use that bottle to feed her son. That she can't do. Right? She can only nurse the child directly. But to express milk into a bottle and then to use the bottle to feed her child, that she's not allowed to do. If you skip down to source number 12, why is that? The Bir Halacha explains in the name of the Prima Gadim, Delachlo me'adam lesoch kli, yesh v'esav d'oraisa m'shum mefarik. That's mefarik. Right? If a woman is expressing milk into a kli, that's mefarik. The only heter was because it was achilo. It was derech achilo. That was the heter. But if it's not derech achilo, the child's not eating like that. It's just going into a kli. It's going into a bottle, into a bag, or whatever she's nursing into, she's expressing into. There's no heter for that. The one thing that the Shulchan Aruch does, right, going back to source number 11, this is in the next sif, he writes that sometimes you have a child that doesn't latch on right away, and the woman wants to express just a few drops of milk to get the child, you know, to get it into the child's mouth so that the child will be interested in nursing. He'll realize what's going on here, and he'll want to nurse. So that says the Shulchan Aruch is okay. Mutar l'isha l'kaleach me'achalav k'dei she'yochas atino kadav v'inak. That's also derech achila. You're just trying to get the child to nurse, so that's also derech achila. But to actually to actually express milk into a kli, that would be prohibited on Shabbos. Let's say a woman is in pain, right? Let's say she's in pain and she needs to express milk. So what does she do? So the Shulchan Aruch writes in source number 13, "V'chein hi ba'atzma yecholo lehotzi biyada cholav hametzarosa." If she's in pain, she's allowed to express the milk to relieve that pain. But, writes the Mishnah Berurah, how should she do it? In source number 14, similar to what we said when it came to milking, al ha'aretz, right? She should do it le'ibud, right? I mean, don't save it. Don't put it into a bottle or into a bag so you can save that milk for later. Do it le'ibud, do it onto the ground, or let's say do it into the sink or something like that. Kiderach mefarek, kevan sholich le'ibud. Right, so then it's okay because then it's holich liibud. Va'oda havi melacha shein etzricha legufa de potter. Also, remember we said that it's a melacha. If you don't need the milk, it's a melacha shein etzricha legufa. Right, it's a melacha that's not necessary for itself. Umishum tzara lo gazrinan. So therefore, since melacha shein etzricha legufa is only aser midrabanan, if she's in pain, so we waive that aser midrabanan and we say that she's allowed to do it. But again, a woman, if she is in pain, she should only express milk in a way that it's holech le'ibut. Either, most women are going to be doing it indoors, so they're not going to do it onto the floor, but either they can do it into a sink, directly into the sink, so it goes le'ibut, or if they need to do it into some sort of bottle or receptacle, they can. What they can do is they can put a little bit of dish soap or something. You know, put a little bit of soap into the bottle at first, so when the milk goes in, it's automatically le'ibut. Nobody's ever going to drink that milk. So that's another way to do it, directly into that thing. B'ritz Hashem, next week we'll continue with I think the final shiur in this little series of Schita. We'll discuss sponges and maybe toothbrushes and things like that, which would be interesting. Yeah.
If the woman presses the milk into a bottle.